Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are on the 1st of October, and the government is shut down and the lights are still on. How does that work?
Isn't that great, though? It's a feeling of freedom. Like, there's, you know, we don't have Big Brother watching over us and all that. The entire government is shut down. This whole thing is going crazy. There's anarchy and there's craziness in the streets. I can't believe what's going on down here in Miami.
Yeah, well, I think they just have a party. So the question, you can answer this because you're the expert. Okay. So everybody's on furlough, so they're not paying all these 800,000 government workers. But somehow, because of it, they're losing money.
Who's losing money?
Apparently, it's costing the government money to lay people off or something.
Well, I mean, here's the problem.
Seems to me, if that's the case, why don't they just keep them working there and just send them promissory notes? California's done that, by the way.
Well, I think, first of all, I don't think there's not a total shutdown yet. It hasn't been an absolute, you know, kind of just across the board. Little components are shut down here or there, and there's been a variety of, kind of last minute, we're going to hold off. There's still some funding available. And, you know, I don't think it's 800,000 furloughed yet. I don't think it's that much. But nonetheless, it is some and a big number. And, as the time goes on is where the problems come in. As it gets longer and longer that the government is shut down, quote unquote, the more and more of the facilities are going to get closed. So it's not a total shutdown yet. It's just kind of slowly but surely. And then in terms of losing money, I mean, the economy loses money because there's not much money put
in.
The
claim was that the government's going to lose money.
I don't understand.
That's what I'm saying. I thought you may have heard that and you have something to say about it because it doesn't make sense to me either. Money should be piling up.
Yeah, I mean, money would be piling up, although the IRS and I don't know. You know what? The thing is that no matter what happens in the end, I mean, I'm sure they're not going to miss out on all of their checks. They're just on furlough right now. And then it'll be funded and they'll get their back pay and all that. And there's just a problem right now with the flow of funds as it is. And, you know, the Social Security is going to get their money right now and Medicare, Medicaid will get their money right now again. And, you know, depending on what particular non-essential or essential department you're in is where the problems are. I think that the politicians make a lot more out of this, not to minimize this, but they make a lot more out of this than it really is, because it really, again, is just a matter of the time that we're dealing with this.
Okay.
In other words, if it's one day versus one week versus one month, it's a whole different animal.
Right. Yeah, no, I would think so. And I don't know how they're going to break this logjam because both sides are adamant.
And they're going to get into the whole debt ceiling thing, which is coming up shortly.
Yeah,
what this is going to be. That's the big problem, by the way. You know, the thing is.
Yeah,
that
no, they have to deal with that. But I think they don't. I can't believe they let that slide.
No, I agree with you. They're not going to. But they're going to. I think that the Republicans will use that as another a way for them to have some kind of, you know, a little bit more of leverage. And that's a problem. I mean, they're being pretty cranky on this. I think that this is a small grouping within the Republican Party that is really just it's not that they didn't get their way. It's just they have these certain things that are on their agenda and they will do whatever they can to get there, and very much like the other side. But the thing is that it's not necessarily good for the country short term. Whether or not it's good for the country long term,
you don't know. Well, you do know one thing. And it's not that many of them. I think it's a small contingent, but they're of the they essentially went to the voters of their area and said, "Here's what I'm going to do," and the voters said, "Well, you have to do this and this and this," and they agreed to it. And if they don't do it, they're out.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't really have a lot. It seems to me, because you're supposed to represent your people.
You're supposed to. They're
going out of their way to represent their people to the point where it's maybe they could have communicated better that, you know, at some point they may want to, you know, be a little more flexible, but they didn't communicate that. So they promised inflexibility on certain items and they're delivering. So you can't really fault them in so far as their constituencies are concerned, but it's not still the majority of people. So there's some more to this than just a few. You know, the Tea Party hasn't taken over the place.
No, but also President Obama, you have to look at the other side. The President Obama is not – he's also saying he's not moving and budging. He's no negotiations. I mean – have you ever heard no negotiations before? What is that?
Well, you know, he's – I don't know. You're losing – I can't believe people aren't losing confidence in him because he's the guy who's supposed to make this work. I mean, he's the guy who's supposed to be the leader. So he's the guy that's supposed to keep this from happening. He didn't do it. So, you know, and you can blame the Republicans all you want, but still.
Right. Well, I mean, so the fact of the matter is – it is a logjam. It is probably government at its worst. 17 years is the last time that we had such a situation. And again, the main thing here is that this is just one more, confirmation that the government that we have currently, the entirety of it, is extraordinarily dysfunctional.
Yeah, it sucks.
And what's amazing is that we seem to be, you know, even with that, moving along.
Well, the power is still going.
Right.
You know, it's
and
like
the markets, we're very
actually,
happy
at 9 o'clock last night, we had a toast.
Oh.
I had some wine. So we had it's 9 o'clock. The government shut down. Toast to the government. So we toasted. And the power stayed on. The lights stayed on. The cars were still driving around. The freeway still going. The TV's still on. The cable's still working. The internet's still running. I'm, you know, talking to you. You're in Florida. I'm in California. We've got a connection. So I think if they're going to shut, you know, if the government was really shutting, they should just shut down everything. Shut down. That would stop anything like that from ever happening again.
Well, the funny thing is that up until this point,
half-assed shutdown.
Yeah, well, that's what it is. But up until this point, markets have been really concerned. Before today, before Tuesday, the Dow Jones Industrial was down 6 out of the last 8 sessions into this, and then all of a sudden here we are. We come into this, and while the Dow was weaker than other components this day. You know, you saw the NASDAQ up 1.25%. You saw the small caps up to an all-time high again today. You saw that the S&P followed through very nicely. Some of it was due to the fact that we saw a better-than-expected ISM manufacturing number, which was very good. On the other hand, the idea that we have a government shutdown is also in the minds of investors, those that desire any kind of reason to buy because there'll be more stimulus. Remember that Bernanke did not endeavor in any tapering, and one of the reasons was that he saw supposedly that there was going to be a lot of bickering and a problem with this whole this continuation of not only the debt ceiling but you know the funding for the government. So you know the thought is that hey, it's great, give us more problems because the Fed will just continue to pump in money.
That's a funny, odd logic, but yeah, it makes some sense. I can see
that
it.
Logic has been going on for the last year and a half, 2 years. It's no different.
Just keep things screwed up so we get more free money into the system.
Right.
Well, the system needs the money.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not as though we're falling into an inflationary spiral or going into one. We're still fighting deflation, and you need this money being pumped in. I think that's what everyone's concluded. That's my conclusion.
So now here's something interesting. You know that they've been talking in the news constantly about the continuing resolution and the need to – it needs to be passed in order to keep the government open. That's this whole thing, the continuing resolution. They use a little short term for that. They call it the CR.
Right. It's been going on forever.
Right. Reed says he wants a clean CR. Others say they want to they won't look at a CR unless it's clean and all these different things about the CR. Now here's what's interesting. In parts of Asia – this is true – the CR is what's referred to as the comfort room or the bathroom. So I've been wondering every time they talk about all these different things they want out of the CR, how this is playing over in Asia.
They're laughing.
You got to be hysterical.
That's funny.
Seriously.
Yeah, I never did.
You know, the WC
is
the washroom. Is the wash closet. Yeah, WC is wash. What, the wash closet? Washroom closet? Washing? Wash closet? What's it called? Water closet.
Water closet. That's in Europe. They called it WC.
It's in Europe.
WC is what you would say in France, just so people point. Because you need to learn a few things, a few words of French and German.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very easy to remember.
Now, some of the market today moved also on Apple. Apple was up 2.4% because we got another one of those wonderful little tweets from Mr. Carl Icahn this morning. Now, I attached a picture of his Twitter account for you. I think he has about 85,000 followers or something like that. He has a total of 35 tweets. Now, look – actually, you should – I didn't give you the full account, but you should look at the tweets that he has done. Each of those are clearly designed to pump up whatever stock he is aiming at. You know, it's all a lot of...
he follows nine people, so he doesn't follow anybody, basically. Mm-hmm. This is just a promotion. This, by the way, would be... If I was the SEC, I'd bust him. I'd say, what is the point of this thing except for just promoting yourself? Because he's not following anybody. Mm-hmm. In fact, let me go to that site while you're talking. I'll go look at the...
So just anybody can just type in Carl Icahn and just Twitter. So, and then it will come up with IC, H-A-N.
Okay.
Twitter. It's twitter.com/Carl_C_Icahn. Icahn. And he's got 35 tweets, 88,000. What did he have earlier? How many followers did he have earlier?
I don't know. I haven't followed him at all.
No, I'm looking right here because when I did this 87. So he gained about 1,000 followers today. Mm. Nice.
Okay. Here's who he's following. A good one. Number one on the list, Maria Bartiromo.
Nice.
Hey. And then there comes the Jennifer Alban.
Really?
The U.S. investment strategy at Reuters.
Oh, not Jennifer. Not Jennifer.
No. This is another one. She's attractive, though. Dave Benioff, Wall Street Journal Money Beat. Jim Cramer, because he gets on there. And Nathan Vardy, Stephen Bertone, Forbes associate editor covering tech, disruptors, and billionaires. Okay. David Faber. Mm-hmm. Trish Regan, who used to be at CNBC, now she's an anchor at Bloomberg, and Scott Wapner.
Yeah, Wapner, yeah, over at CNBC.
Wapner, CNBC, that's it.
And his...
That's bull crap.
Yeah, and the other thing says on his Twitter profile, says, some people get rich studying artificial intelligence. Me, I make money studying natural stupidity.
Yeah, that's what it says. That's his name.
And if you look at all of the... comments that he has, the tweets that he put out. You see how they're all. IEP announces an acquisition it believes will greatly enhance shareholder value. See our press release.
Yeah, I'll be on CNBC at noon. Yep. I had a cordial dinner with Tim.
Now, this is interesting. Read this one. This is unbelievable.
I had a cordial dinner with Tim last night. We don't say Tim. It just says Tim, who? We pushed hard for $150 billion buyback. We decided to continue dialogue in about 3 weeks.
$150 billion buyback by Apple. $150 billion, that would be a world record. It has to be.
Yeah.
$150 billion. Just we pushed hard for $150 billion buyback. So in other words, again, the same as thing as he did last time, is that he's doing this incredibly over the top number. I mean, Apple has whatever $600 billion, but the point is, you know, how much is Apple worth? The market cap, they're gonna basically consume themselves.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. What is the market cap right now?
Oh, I don't know the exact, but let's see.
I'm here at the computer. Okay,
443 billion.
That's ridiculous.
Unbelievable, right?
Yeah.
So they're going to let's see here. The stock was up 2.4% on this disclosure or whatever this is.
It's a variation on a pump and dump.
It's unbelievable, really. I mean, it's just amazing. But they'll get away with it as long as they get away with it. You know how that goes.
Yeah. Yeah, we saw they witnessed a number of these tweet scams.
Yeah. Let's see what else we got. Let's finish up on the government. Because of the government shutdown, depending on how long it lasts, there may be several key economic reports that will not be released. One of them would be the Friday's big labor report with the unemployment numbers.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. So there's,
right, if there's no money to release the report.
Right. They just can't do it. There's just nobody that can push that button.
Huh.
Yep. Now, King.com, we talked about
this. May actually work out to the benefit of the...
It could be. It could be. But it's definitely iffy right now of whether or not that's going to come out. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. Now, King.com, which is the London-based maker of that Candy Crush saga, has filed an S-1. You can't believe this. An S-1 document with the Securities and Exchange Commission to do an IPO. And the estimated value of the company, listen to this, $5 billion. for a company that has a game that, I mean, they make a million or so a day, but the point is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, so Zynga made a million or so a day, and that was that.
Yep.
This is not a sustaining business.
Yeah, I don't know
this
what
they're the hit business. I don't want people don't get it straight that this is a, like the record industry used to be. It's a hit driven. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, I would say Grand Theft Auto apparently broke all kinds of entertainment records by in 3 days making a billion in sales, setting both kinds of people's hair on fire.
Mm-hmm.
But again, even they, which is a hit maker, they seem to have a knack so far. They can crap out one day. Next thing you know, there's nothing. They're done. So right. You have to change. You cannot look at these companies in the same way you look at a steel mill.
Right. No, clearly not, because it's a different type of product, and it's not, you know, the cash can come and go, and there's going to be a lot of question, and whether or not they're going to be a one-hit wonder or not is also a big issue, and there's a risk involved in that.
Yeah, no, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with it, but I thought $5 billion was a bit of a pricey.
It was pretty funny.
Yeah. All right, so Japan is now doing something. They're decided, okay, here's what we're going to do. They have the third arrow from their quiver and stool and all these things that they've used as these metaphors to describe their stimulus package. They're going to be increasing the sales tax, lowering the corporate tax, creating a tax benefit to invest in risk assets, and utilizing more stimulus to wash out any of the negative effects from all of that.
Yeah, I was listening to NHK discuss this, and they had some Japanese economists on, and they're going to raise, I guess it's a national sales tax or a VAT. Mm-hmm. Well, they call it a consumption tax, even though it's a VAT, which are very deadly. And they want to raise it, I think, to 10% or 8%, one of the two. Whatever it is, it's a big upgrade from whatever the old number was, according to these guys. But the experts say for it to do anything in Japan, it has to be 20%. It has to be at least double or more than what it is, what they're doing. So this is minor.
Well, but one of the main things is that they have to show, I don't know if we talked about this, you and I, before, though. By April, they need to show that they're getting an increase in revenues to offset the amount of bonds they've been creating and issuing, because they need to bring in the money so that they can handle the debt servicing. And with the amount of bonds they have compared to – or the debt compared to the GDP, they're just – they have an enormous amount. It's just brimming over. Hmm. And the problem is that they need to do something to bring in revenue. So if they increase the sales tax, which would hurt the economy, right? So what they do is they just go on the other side and put more stimulus out. So I don't know how – they think they're going to get away with that.
No, this is a mess. I just don't see – the Japanese have never done well with these schemes.
Yeah, and it's getting more schemey by the day.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
We'll see what happens there. Okay, now gold got smacked down about $40 today.
Yeah.
And I didn't really understand that too well, because the government shutting down, doesn't that increase more risk or
– Yeah, you'd think.
And the dollar was down.
Or maybe it's
on that.
Better when the government shuts down, everyone benefits. I know what you're thinking, but
no sense, right?
Thinking the opposite. Yeah.
Yeah, and silver was also crushed. You know, finally, crude was down to 101, 102 today. Ooh. After now, Syria is no longer in the picture, it seems. So, you know, there's a crazy amount of opposite things going on. You know, what would be logical, and it would seem that it is the okay, this happens, and then you have the cause, and then you have the effect, and that's where that happens, hasn't happened so many times. And it's just another one of them. You know, yeah. It's just another one of them.
Never ends.
Yep. Now, the Obamacare insurance exchanges, they opened today in many places, and it seems there was a big problem. There was too many people that were flooding the sites. And it caused a major delay because many of the marketplaces online were unable to handle the traffic. And in New York, they said that the exchange had about 2.5 million visitors in the first half hour. California reported seeing as many 10,000 hits in a second. And
yeah, a lot of this, though, I was watching a CNN report that was kind of interesting. They showed how the site, the main health.gov site, one of the women that was on the set, she showed how it worked, and they had a big screen, and they said, you go here, and then this didn't work. At first you get a delay, then this doesn't work. And then when you go to sign up, you get this error, and then you get this other error, and then this doesn't work. And then you're supposed to pick from something here, then the list isn't there. And I get the sense that because the site is so poorly designed, even though they had 3 years to do it, that lots of this traffic was people going back or just hanging on the site trying to get it to work and getting nowhere. I think it was a lot of failures. I think that's one of the reasons that the thing was so...
Well, so it could be either a database overload, or what you're saying is the site was actually working. You can click through it. But the problem was that many of the components weren't working, is what you're saying.
Yes. There was one thing, for example, you had to prove who you were because you had to get an account name.
Mm-hmm.
And then it asked you for these. Here, pick one of the options to, you know, like you'd be your Social Security or something. And then when you hit on the options, she showed this right on the screen. The option says no options available.
Hmm.
So you couldn't pick any options. There were no options. And they said they checked it in 20 states, and 12 of the states, it wasn't working. It was exactly the same problem. So I think this thing is just – it was very poorly tested.
Well, you know
– you got 6 months to do it. I mean, I don't, you know, everyone rushing to do everything at the last minute. I just
you want to put some spin on it. The White House said that the volume gives you a sense of how important this is to millions of Americans.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what they do. They're good at spinning stuff.
Yeah. Now, on the New York site, I was looking at it tonight. I want to see what this looked like, and I was kind of checking it out. One of the things I noticed is that, like you said, you have to prove a few things, that you live in the state and all that. But I found this really interesting. There are three components to be able to shop the marketplace in New York, on the New York site. The first thing is you must live in New York, which that makes sense.
Yep.
Must be a U.S. citizen, national, or lawfully present immigrant. Okay. I'll go with that, right?
Yeah.
And the third thing is you cannot be currently incarcerated.
That would make sense.
But first of all, does that infer that people that are in jail have internet access on a regular basis?
It implies it.
Yeah.
And also, why would anyone in jail? Because they have health care in jail.
Right.
In fact,
yeah,
a lot of prisoners, when they get out in some states, they get essentially a health care system for them.
Mm-hmm.
Which is better than many healthcare programs, but that's another story.
Now, can you get this right before the judge hands down the sentence?
I don't know why you'd want it.
Well, maybe you wouldn't want it.
You're
yeah,
going right
point.
Into healthcare. You got it made. Well,
so,
if you don't mind the sex.
Right, well, yeah.
Yeah.
I just thought that was interesting. That was, you know, out of the three things, it just stuck out.
It was pretty funny.
You know?
Well, they're probably checking it out to see if they can scam it. I mean, that's the only reason you would... If you're a prisoner, you're looking for some way of, you know, getting a check in the mail somehow.
I guess, but I mean, well, currently incarcerated.
Me.
I mean,
yeah, that's a good catch. It's dumb.
And what is incarcerated? I mean, incarcerated is it that you're inside of a cell, or maybe you're out in the yard,
or maybe in your the house with a thing around your ankle.
Oh yeah, maybe. I wonder. We should look up the definition of what incarcerated is. Exactly what they're talking about here. I need to look at this real quick. What would be the definition of incarcerated? Many are incarcerated for property offense. Synonyms, that doesn't give us anything here. More. You're held captive. Well, okay. Well, what about that? What if you're being kidnapped?
Yeah, well, I don't think that's the time you'd be looking for health insurance, but okay.
Hmm. Put in chains, held captive. Informal, behind bars. She returned to the site where she was incarcerated near 50 years earlier. All right, well, you can't be in any kind of prison situation in New York. I don't know if California has the same thing, but California's more liberal. They probably don't.
No.
You know? Now, in terms of government issues, there's been this debate that has gone on, and I remember trying to have a discussion about this. It really – you can't have a discussion with someone who works for the Postal Service that is a lifer there about the Postal Service. They get really bent.
Yeah, I don't blame them because I know what's going on. It's a scam.
Well, it seems that you're talking about the scam because there's two different opinions. One of them is, hey, you know, this Postal Service, man, they can't make any money. What a terrible operation.
They make tons of money if it wasn't for the pre-funding of 75 years. 75 years of pre-funding the pensions.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's pretty costly. That's a lot of overhead. How about just funding the pensions as a normal company would? Why would you have to pre-fund? This is a pet peeve of mine, by the way. Why would you have to? Because I think they're trying to scam the public into make privatizing the Postal Service or selling it to UPS or FedEx. So every envelope you send is $8 instead of 50 cents. But why would you make them pre-fund for 75 years in advance unless you're trying to break their back?
Or
nobody else does that. The EPA doesn't do it.
Well, this is a way that, yeah, but, you know, the EPA is different. It's not like I have a daily requirement maybe to mail something. This is a way possibly to offset, maybe they're dipping in to take some money for the Social Security.
Somebody's stealing the money.
Well, the U.S. Postal Service today defaulted on a $5.5 billion payment for retiree pensions, one of the 75 years. It was supposed to be $5.6 billion, and it was a pre-funding payment that was due September 30th, 2013. Now, the postmaster said at this time, the Postal Service was in the midst of a financial disaster. And
what was it? What was the disaster? By the way, most of the guys they've been putting in charge of the post office are corrupt creeps that are designed to help bring the post office down. I'm totally on the side of the post office employees on this deal, even though I do agree that a lot of them are, you know, lazy. Some of them aren't. Many of them are very hardworking. Whatever. And I don't like the idea of them driving around in cars. When I was a kid, they used to walk these routes, but that's another story. That's not what the problem is.
Well, the rural routes, you have to have a car.
Yeah, you do, but I have a car. I mean, they got cars on the... On the
well, wait a minute. Do you want them also to carry the mail, or can they put it in one of those funny...
There was a moment in history where they used to carry the mail in a bag, a big giant mail bag.
Yeah.
And then they found these little rolly carts, and they'd push it around the neighborhood, and they'd have the couple bags on there, and they'd be able to do a big route. In much of California, all I see them do is driving around.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I've never seen really anything, unless you were very in some kind of a city where there was apartments and all that. I mean, you know, it's much more efficient to drive, especially if you have one of those cool Jeeps with the wheel on the other side. You know, you drive around
you
and you kind
end
of show them
in Europe or in England. You can send them over there.
Yeah. Well, this is the postmaster saying at this time, the Postal Service was in the midst of a financial disaster and that is burdened by an outdated and inflexible business model that prevents it from making payments. So there you go. So
what does that even mean?
Well, he's saying basically that there's a what you're saying, that obviously that the requirement to pay this amount of money in not only advance, but this amount of money on the pensions in advance is breaking their backs. So, of course, they want to have a 3-cent hike in rates. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, have you seen the prices? Have you noticed the prices of FedEx going up?
Oh, yeah. We don't even use them anymore because the prices have gone through
the
ceiling. I won't use FedEx. I go to UPS. Or I use that overnight, the two-day thing on the post office. They also have an overnight thing, which is cheaper. The post office and UPS have better deals. And, no, FedEx is – I haven't sent anything on FedEx for a couple of years. It keeps going up. And I went there to do something recently. And I said, holy crap, what are you kidding me? Right. These overnight letters used to be like $4 or $5. Now they're like 20.
Yeah, I sent something, and it was a Saturday delivery, and I could not believe the price. I was shocked. It was like $23. I said, $23? I mean, you know, I was used to maybe, you know, 12 or 14 maybe for a Saturday delivery. And, you know, we don't send that often these days because you have between faxing, which we don't use that much, but emails, et cetera. I mean, you don't need to do that.
Yeah, email works great for most things.
You know, with scanning and all that, you just don't need to go, you know, to send it out. And you have, you know, signatures that could be verified with – you know, a lock on a PDF and all that good stuff, you know. But anyway, you know, speaking about the UK, you mentioned a second ago that it seems that more than half of the British airline pilots, and this is going on the story that came out recently, said they'd fallen asleep in the cockpit.
Well, yeah.
You know, and
it's kind of boring, don't you think? You pushed autopilot, nothing's going on, and it's kind of, you take a snooze. I would.
This is on the back of a story that came out, I think it was last week, that was talking about when two pilots fell asleep on a Virgin America flight. Both the pilots fell asleep. They were on autopilot, and they were, I guess, were woken up by some kind of alarm, maybe the alarm about your proximity.
Yeah, it makes noise.
Yeah. So, you know, hey, we're here, guys. And they were asleep, and there was some kind of, you know, they looked into this, and as usual, you know, it wasn't released for a few months that this happened. So I guess the people now have no idea if they were on that plane or not. But I guess they're having all sorts of problems. Maybe they shouldn't be drinking tea. Maybe that's it. Maybe some coffee. No? I mean, something. But it does seem kind of boring there. You know, you're on an 8-hour flight. What do you do?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, in some planes, they have a little area in the back, and the pilots, at least one of them, usually gets up and he goes, takes a 4-hour nap, and then he goes back, and then the other guy takes a nap. And that usually works. I can just imagine two guys in the cockpit that, you know, just snoozing off and just hoping for the alarms to go off if they start to hit something. Mountain ahead.
Iceberg.
For the most of the flight, I don't see what they're not doing anything. They don't need to be awake.
Yeah.
I don't think it's that big of a deal.
All right. Well, maybe this is a new thing that can actually go on. I mean, it is, you know, we'll get into maybe self-driven cars. So, you know, and the planes do have good autopilots. I mean, that's what they rely on them for. So maybe they can cut down on some pilots, actually, and save some money on the tickets.
Let a stewardess push the buttons.
Yeah. I mean, maybe we could rotate the passengers. You're just on watch.
Well, there was the one where the guy dropped dead this week, and a pilot. I don't know why the co-pilot didn't handle the duties, but I guess he couldn't. I don't know. But the pilot had a heart attack and dropped dead in the cockpit.
Oh.
And so they found another pilot that was, you know, going from place to place to change, I guess, planes. And he was in the plane in the back, and they brought him up the front to land the plane. These planes aren't that hard to land.
No.
Easy. You can be walked down, but yeah, I've been in the simulators. There's a big simulator at NASA locally, and I've been in it, and I've flown a bunch of these planes, as it were.
I was in the one down here. They closed it down, by the way. That's the one. That's the one that the guys used and they trained on for you know what.
Oh.
Yep.
So anyway, this one can be. There's a couple of them, and one of them was a 747. I have to say, I've not been able to land that plane. I've crashed every time, but I've only really tried about 5 or 6 times.
Well, maybe you need to go into a real plane. Maybe the simulator is just not really.
You got to get the simulator down. But I think if I can get it, so I've landed some of the other planes, but the 747 for some reason I don't know what happens, but I always crash, always. So,
well. Just keep it on autopilot.
But nobody was walking me down. I was just trying to land it, you know.
You didn't have any kind of major wind or shears? Or
no, but I've done that, though, just as a joke.
Yeah.
They had one where you could set up a scenario where the runway is icy and there's a 50-mile-an-hour crosswind.
Oh, that's rough.
Yeah. You take off. I mean, you try to take off. As soon as you do anything, the plane gets blown into the terminal. Everyone's killed. It was very, very amusing.
Well, fun. A couple of things. Now, let's talk about what happened with JCPenney last week.
Yes.
This is really kind of fascinating. So let me get the date straight here. This is probably the biggest bonehead move / potential criminal action, okay? The CEO is discussing some things with some reporters and comes out with, hey, you know what? We don't need cash. There's been some concern that they needed cash.
Yeah, it would seem like they need cash to me.
Yeah, that there was having a little problem that, you know, they would need some cash to make sure that they're insulated against any further downturn in their business. And so what happened was the CEO came out and said, you know, Ullman says, you know, we don't need cash at this point. And, you know, we tried to make sure everything was all happy. Okay, so stock goes up like, I think it was, I don't know, 10% or something like that. And then, or maybe it was up 6%. And then Goldman comes out that day. This was on Thursday and says, hey, you know what? We've done a little work. And we agree there's no need for cash until about 2014, sometime later, if that does get to that point. All right. Market likes this and it's all exciting. And, you know, you got not only the CEO, but you have Goldman saying, what a great thing. Now, fast forward to the close of the market at 4 o'clock, and the announcement, JCPenney is doing a secondary for about $1 billion. And who are they doing it through?
Probably Goldman.
Goldman! They did the secondary.
So what is the point of all these announcements?
Keep it up so it doesn't crash down. It was really looking a little ugly there. Now, meanwhile, I think they put it out at 9. My recollection was they put it out at 9.65. I think that was the number that they put it out at. Okay, so the secondary is at 965, bringing in about, like I said, about $1 billion into JCPenney, and the stock then was higher, and then of course it dropped down to the 965 number.
It tanked.
Yeah, but then after that is where things got a little hairy, because everybody's like, wait a second, let me get this straight. They don't need money. They do need money. Well, this is not good the way this is going down. So now you have an issue of trust and confidence in the stock and the CEO and the players that are, you know, surrounding themselves with that. So now, of course, fast forward, stock is at 875.
Nah.
which is it hit. Let's see here. I don't think it hit today, but yesterday it hit a 31-year low.
That's pretty unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. 52-week range has been 859 to 27. Today it was 869 low. So therefore, it hit the 31-year low back yesterday. I don't know if I have a chart that goes back that far. I mean, I got a chart here. Yeah, I got a chart here. Let's see.
31-year chart.
Where would that be? Let's see. What year would that be? I got it back to the 70s. In the 70s, it was sixes, sevens, yeah. So eight. So right about, let's see, price. So about 1980, what is that, 81? 82?
80, yeah, 82.
82, yeah, you can see that right there. And then it never really hit there again. And although it back in 2000, a little difficult to see this here. Let me make this bigger. Maybe this will work. Yeah. In 2000, let's see what year this was here. Yeah, December of 2000, the price was 950, 920. Yeah, it hit a low pretty much there. It's hard to get to the nine, about $9, we'll call it, round number, $9. In January of 2001, I mean, it slid like it slid now.
Yeah.
Had a nice little rise up, and then it rise up, and it kind of leveled off, and then it just went kaput, you know, from there. So got a couple of nice little mountains here, but then
you
this last mountain
out to
$9 range.
Stock and get over it.
Yep. Pretty terrible. Pretty terrible. And this is really a big issue, I think, because there's a lot of this kind of, what would we call it, just, you know, bad information being passed around. And the question is, you know, how long do investors put up with it? Now, you know, we put up with it for a while and, you know, everybody was kind of like okay with it, I guess, that JCPenney's going to turn around and all. And then finally, I think the, you know, at this point, it's just done. Same thing happened with BlackBerry. You know, BlackBerry is going to go sell itself. It's not going to sell itself. It is going to sell itself. They're going to do much better because the new device. You know, you had a situation like this also with Best Buy. Now, Best Buy made a pretty astounding recovery this year, if you look at this. The stock is up, let's see, this year, year to date, it's up 220%.
Wow.
This year. Yeah, this year. It's at $37.95. You look at it, though, I mean, this is, let's look at the 10-year here. I mean, it's not too far off, I mean, from, let's see where this was here.
Yeah, it was down to, like, bouncing around $5 a share.
And then they came out with some commentary that, hey, they're going to go
never
private.
Really, oh. We've never really collapsed. It, like, picked up, it went through the 2000 boom, came down mm-hmm. a little bit, and then blustered up again, and then it only had a small glitch in the 2007 thing, and then the big decline was only recently, and that was back up to 40.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very strange chart. I mean, it's like it's really wants to. I don't see it. I don't see why this stock is not a $5 stock like it used to be.
Yeah, and then let's take a look at the.
Do you make it any money? What's the PE? What's the deal?
Yeah, I'm looking at this here. I'm looking at this now. There is no PE. Let's see why that is. Let's see down here.
I have
net profit margin
ideas.
Is negative. Return on assets negative. Return on average equity negative. They're expecting it to be. Where is it? Earnings going to be coming? November 19th. They'll be coming out with their earnings.
Who goes there? I mean, people. You can buy a washing machine. I guess it's a good place to look at refrigerators. They have still sell DVDs, I believe, and they have a pretty good selection of flat panels. And they have a lot of computer stuff. They have some. You can get discs there and cables. I have to go back to the store and check it out again. I just always remember they're just a bit short on it. There's always the one thing you want they don't have, or I'm not sure.
I'm wondering why there's no earnings per share on this. I mean, is it negative? I mean, I don't see it on this particular one.
On mine, I've got 14.16 forward PE for February 2nd, 2015.
I don't have any earnings per share, though. I wonder why
that
is.
Peg of $1.90 or peg of $1.97.
Interesting. Well, yeah. But anyway, bottom line is that, you know, you've seen these kind of recoveries, and that, I mean, if you look at that chart, that's vertical.
Yeah.
I mean that's what you call a V, you know, and if it's going to move towards the last high, which, you know, you could say that it has the opportunity because it crossed over that big valley that was back in 2010. You know, you have up to what price is this here?
Well, they did bring back some guy. You know, this is a company I've talked to these guys over the years. They're a company that is or used to be, and I think the guy left and he came back. there's like a metrics logistics operation where they can predict, you know, what's moving and how they can, you know, restock. They don't keep a lot of they don't keep unnecessary inventory. Mm-hmm. Everything is designed to be there for a week and gone and not hanging around. They don't load up, at least generally, with a bunch of stuff that just sits there. And they're very good about that while making the store packed with stuff. I mean, obviously you can't – I've always thought a store should just be like a Fry's. I don't know if you've ever been to one.
Yeah.
But Fry's has like everything. And there's a lot of stuff that I'm just sits there. And I've always thought that a store – it's not a big deal for a store to have a huge – it is a big deal for these guys who are really these numbers guys. But it seems to me you'd have a big store that has everything. And there'd be items there that would be – you have to keep dusting them, but they might be there for 6 years. But it makes the store look like it's got everything. And so you would be attracted to a store like that. And so these items were more or less like the furniture, some of these items that never sell. But they're there all the time. Somebody maybe once in a while buys one. I never had it explained to me thoroughly why that's a bad idea.
Well, what about this store? Have you been in the H.H. Gregg's?
No, I haven't even heard of it.
H.H. Gregg, I've been in there. It's a kind of a Best Buy, but more appliance-oriented.
Yeah.
And I never really understood the store. I tried to go in there a few times, and I really did. But I just couldn't. I just couldn't figure it out. This stock is up 161% this year. I mean, you look at the chart, though, it fell apart into 2012. It was as high as 30. I mean, their sales were pretty awful.
What's the store like?
Well, if I could describe it, there's a lot of to the right, there's all these appliances, you know, washing machines and refrigerators and all that kind of stuff. And they have, like, the car room with the car audio in the back. They have some TVs, but not that many. They have, like, a lot of little parts, but not like a complete selection. You know, and they have like, it's almost like, you know, the electronics selection at like an Office Max or, you know, that.
Right. You don't have much of anything. Radio Shack is where you go.
Yeah, there's a couple of things, like there's a couple of routers maybe and a few. There's not like a big selection. Like at,
right, it's like Office Max. You could go there, there'd be some printers, and they maybe a good selection of printers, but then when it comes to like there would be, you're right, just a few routers and not really that good of a selection and some other kind of mediocre selections.
Right, and then, you know, if you want like audio or any kind of boards or anything like that, it's not really there. I mean, they have like a lot of little things. And you can go to their website and see. I mean, you know, but this is terrible. This is an awful store.
See, that's so like the contrasty store to me, the one I always like. I don't know if you ever had any of these out there, but we have them out here. It's called Guitar Center.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Love that place.
You go in there, you can't get out of there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like everything is interesting. They got
right.
It's just like you can't. It's just like they've got everything, and it's just fascinating. So the place is always packed with gawkers. I don't think. I mean, people are buying stuff. I buy stuff there, but it's not. It's. I mean, you talk about creating an environment where you just keep the customers in there. I mean, I think they're the best.
Now they were bought out. I think.
Guitar Center.
I'm pretty sure that because they were traded for a while. You could actually bought their stock, but they're no longer. I think they, if I'm not mistaken here, Guitar Center 60s, Community Guitar Center 80s, no 70s, 80s, Guitar Center, Wikipedia. Oh, let's go there, even though I don't like looking there. Guitar Center is now private. Yep, that's right. They were founded in 1959. Their headquarters out by you, Westlake Village in California. And the owner is now Bain Capital. Oh, that's interesting.
Oh, that's interesting.
Acquisition in 2000, Guitar Center purchased a mail order of musicians' friends. I don't think that ever worked out for them too well. In the summer of 2006,
it's still a catalog, I believe.
Yeah, they went private. They definitely went private somewhere here. It was like in 2006, 7. Oh, here, let's see. Musicians friends are talking about here. Let's see. In Somerset, 2006, they purchased 4 stores in Texas. Okay. 2007, the Direct Response Center purchased assets of this other guy. Yeah, well, yeah, they're not. I know they're not. They were public for a while. No, they're not.
Well, it's a great store.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree. And what I like the best about that store is you go there and you got all these musicians, and they just jamming it.
Oh, yeah. If you go late, There's like a concert going on in there.
Yeah, exactly.
You guys hang around and just listen to some guy doing, you know, playing the guitar like a maniac. It's pretty astonishing.
Actually, here it is. It was June 2007. Guitar Center agreed to a $1.9 billion buyout from Bain Capital, totaling $2.1 billion, including debt, deal led by, of course, Goldman, and amounted to a share price of about $63, or 26% premium on the June 26th closing date. So then they opened up in mid 2009 a rehearsal studio in Woodland Hills.
Huh.
They have 8 studios with full backline ranging in 350 to 550 square feet. They also host annual events like the Drum Off, King of Blues contests, and artist appearances throughout the nation. Cool stuff.
Yeah, they I like them because they have all the kind of gear I use for these podcasts. And when we blew up that D to A converter on the show, like about three or four shows ago, I needed to get something. I couldn't wait to 2 days for the Amazon stuff to ship. And I went and bought this new device, which is a M Audio. What the hell's the name of it? It's really a great little product. It's the M Track Plus.
Mm.
Very nice, and just rugged. And the price over at the Guitar Center was the same as I would have got it at Amazon.
Yeah, and the nice thing about that also, you know what I like about that, and we'll kind of not gushing over them, but
yeah,
you could test their microphones out there.
Yeah, there's a lot. You can do everything. You can test everything but the harmonicas.
Oh, and maybe the Jew's harp too.
So anyway, so I actually bought something else before I bought this thing, and I just wouldn't – the machine, the Windows 7 said, I'm not dealing with this. It would not take – it would just wouldn't work. Through the USB port. So I just wrapped it up and put it back in the box and took it to the Guitar Center, got an immediate refund, and bought the other device. I mean, I had to do all that, you know, within just a few hours. I didn't have time to order anything. So it was great. It's a good operation.
Yep, I like it. A couple of things now that I thought were interesting in your neck of the woods. There's something going on in California in particular with solar energy that seems like the utilities are looking to charge customers that have solar energy for their solar use. What is that about?
I don't know.
Isn't the whole point?
I haven't heard this.
Isn't the whole point of utilizing things like solar energy to be more not only cost efficient but energy efficient? So it says, let's say, includes creating extra fees for solar customers or attempting to roll back or end programs that allow solar customers to trade their solar power to generate the grid. Of course. IKEA, which this week starts selling solar panels in the UK, said customers could recoup their cost in 7 years. And utilities are afraid they're going to lose so many customers that the power for solar power that they won't be able to afford and build and maintain the grid. So Georgia Power, which is looking for a fee for renewable energy users.
Yeah.
Arizona is looking at a fee or at curbing an energy swap program. And California utilities were going in the same direction, but state legislators voted to allow the state solar rate plan to continue and even expand.
Yeah, so we didn't do anything.
No.
But Arizona, if I lived in Arizona.
Yeah, man, I'd be all solar.
I'd be all, totally. I mean, it's so hot and sunny.
Yep.
I mean, it's just sunny all the time. And it's a nasty sun that would be great for solar. I'd cover everything.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I mean, but to think that we're gonna go backwards, walk backwards here, and
well,
we're gonna have to.
That's not gonna. The public shouldn't put up with that kind of thing.
Yeah, I hear you.
I mean, it's not as though these guys aren't making any money,
right? They're just nervous that they, you know, basically that somebody's gonna take away their business that they have a monopoly on, and they've been squeezing us for years. And individually, we would amount to a lot, not one at a time, but collectively.
Yeah.
Yeah. We always get screwed. We always get screwed. Now, let me mention that the DH Unplugged Closest to the Pin contest, you know, it's been ongoing. And we're getting a lot more people involved. I want to thank everybody. We're getting – really, it's starting to get – I think our site was overloaded today. You know?
Could be.
And this was on – now, last week, we finished up Boeing, okay? And we had up until about 3 o'clock today, because the price closed last week, of course, on Boeing, and the close of the market today is the time when we evaluate and see who won. Up until about 3 o'clock today, thereabouts, I was winning. I was the number one.
Huh.
And you were number 11 out of many, 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 many. You got many pages here. Now, close of the day is when we actually have the winner. And we do have a winner. And this winner is going to get a month free Trigger Point Research Alerts, where you get the stock alerts for breaking down, breaking up, and all that good stuff. And it's worth $179. Not bad, huh?
No, it's a good deal.
Now, this is Michael W. We'll send you an email, my friend. Mike came in 7 cents from the winning price, which was $117.75. Now, the average entry, we've been talking about this, right, using the collective nature of all everybody to come up with something. The average price was $117.96. Now, that would have put the average person, let's see, the average, in sixth place. Not bad.
No, there may be something we can do with this data.
Yeah. And the high entry was 137. The low entry was 108. So even if you, you know, kind of look at that, you were at 117 round number. I was at 117.40, you know, kind of a tight range, although it started to increase a bit from there. There really wasn't much on the lower end. Not too many people came in at the lower end. As a matter of fact, there was very few. Most people were in the 113s, 112s, but a few 118s, 119s, but not too bad. Now, we talked about having a little bit more volatility in a stock. Well, we're not going to do that this week coming up. We just closed on the UTX, so there's no more entries that are going to be available on that, and that we're going to announce next week, the winner on the DH Unplugged Closest to the Pin contest. And all you have to do is go right to dhunplugged.com and click on the Closest to the Pin. It's right on the top. You can't miss it. And put in your guess, and it gets registered. And by the way, for those of you that like to put in multiple guesses, we don't use that. We take the latest guess, the earliest guess, excuse me. You can't keep putting in guesses over time and time. So with the first guess is the one you're doing. So if you want to hold out, that's fine, but not gonna fool us on that one. But UTX is just closed, and next week is McDonald's, Mickey D's.
Huh. So I watched this show, this Robin Williams comedy.
Oh, his new show?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good segue. Go ahead.
It was a McDonald's commercial for half hour.
Oh, come on.
Yes, it's kind of Mad Men-like comedy. It's like the Mad Men show about advertising agency, and he's like the head of advertising guy. And their whole show is they were concerned because McDonald's was going to drop them. And so they sang the new jingles, and they sang the old jingles, and they talked about McDonald's, and they went on about McDonald's. The whole show was a big commercial for McDonald's. It was disgusting.
So you think McDonald's paid?
They better have. If they didn't, then we have the stupidest producers in the world. Oh, yeah, they paid. They're definitely paid.
I'm looking this up here. How much did McDonald's pay Robin Williams?
Well, his show.
A irreverence-free shill job with a Robin Williams vehicle wrapped around it. That's kind of funny.
Yeah.
McDonald's did not pay and did not have approval on the Crazy Ones pilot.
Then somebody's got something wrong with them, because there was money to be made with that McDonald's. It was all a commercial. There was nothing negative said about the company, and it was all a positive show. It was a commercial. If they didn't get paid for it, then they're idiots.
Yeah, it's all over the web. It's it's all over the web. How much was he paid? A lot of questions about that, you know. Yeah. Yep.
Well, if nothing else, to get a case of burgers.
Yeah, I guess.
Seems like going a long way to get a case of burgers. But mm-hmm. You know.
Well, with that, we have McDonald's is the next week. So put in your entries, and you can look there to find out. Also, a nice spreadsheet that gives you the average, all the past information, the winners, etc. And great. What are we going to do? I think we got to give one of your books away. We'll do that too. Well, we'll keep it for a surprise what we're going to give away, but it'll be good. It'll be good. I do want to mention also that what did I want to mention? There was something else about that. I don't remember. Not coming to me. Not coming to me. Let's see here. McDonald's. Okay, Jim. Okay, now, what else do we have to talk about?
Nothing. The stocks.
Stocks. Let's go to the stocks.
Woohoo!
Oh, I know what I had to tell you. That's what it was. It reminded me when I went to the stocks. So we made a spreadsheet, which I haven't released yet.
Okay.
We did it in Google Docs, so it'll be available. And what it is, I thought it would be neat because we talked about this a couple of weeks ago about how the individual components of the Dow Jones make up.
Right. Yeah, this would be interesting.
So what we did was we put together a spreadsheet that gives the breakdown of each of the Dow Jones 30 and how much live, it's actively working on a daily basis, how much they are daily participating and affecting the total number on the Dow. So if this stock is down 5%, well, how many points on the Dow does that mean? And we have a whole
chart. This is going to be great.
Yeah, so I'll put that up and we'll embed it in a couple of places. I'll probably put it on a couple of sites so we can have it. But we'll have it. And you can just check it out. You can say, okay, hey, what's Goldman's down 5? You know, look at the Dow. Dow's up 30 points. Well, what's the big effect? Wow, IBM is dragging it by 30 points, but this one's pushing it by 20 points. You know, it's kind of cool to look at. So we'll have that for you. No charge.
Another free service.
And we're good at that, huh?
All right, so let's look at the chart. Or the charts. And I see that somebody's finally got a 100% doubler.
That's you.
Yep, I did it. With
Another pharmaceutical.
Yeah, geez, shocker.
Nice. 102. Well, let's just round it. 103%.
Yeah.
103%.
And still going.
Acadia.
And still going.
Yeah. Nowhere for it to stop at this point. Got a big move. You really took them down to the mat on that World Wrestling Entertainment today, up 5.9%. I mean, really?
Yeah, yeah. It was a kick out.
Yeah, unbelievable. I mean, I got to tell you something. That's just amazing. And that's not – this is real world. This is not fake.
Yeah.
Although the things that we are talking about today are just a game, and there is no offer to buy or sell any securities. Make sure that you are involved with some kind of a professional before you make any decisions on your investments, because they all have risk involved. Of course, John Dvorak, myself, or clients of Horowitz Company may own any of these positions, and we do reference that in the disclosures. And again, this is just a game, so please don't just do things blindly, because you know that we are just giving out very hot tips here. That's what it's for.
Right. That's not exactly what we're not doing.
Yeah.
So what do we have?
A lot of stop outs.
Yes, good. We need to get this thing shortened up.
Yeah, so how many? 1, 2, 3, 4. 5 are coming off at least. 5 are coming off, right?
JCPenney's is done.
Oh, yeah. That was done the day it was opened, I think. Good thing. Maybe down another 25%,
30%. Yeah, you would have been. Right. It's a good thing. Sometimes those rules pay off.
Yep. Let's see what else. Go from the top.
Here. Live Nation still hanging in there.
No, that's done. That's done. Gone.
Oh, it's gone?
Yellow. Yep. Gone.
Oh, good. Okay, good. Well, then I just have to find another hot ticket.
Yeah, you only... Oh. Yep, I got that one. Hopefully you all did too. We have something to say about corn?
No.
No? No, nothing there, huh? Nothing.
Now, you may have the kernel of a good idea, though.
Maybe. Could be the start of that, yeah. I hope it doesn't pop very much soon because we have the short on, you know?
Yeah.
So the corn is up 26%, which I still can't believe that's doing so well, to be honest with you. But McGraw-Hill, back to that again, where there's all, it's just I think it's the epitome of the all bluster, no action world that we live in.
Yeah, I think that's one of our best picks ever. I mean, even though we have some killers here and there, but that was just based on government incompetence.
Yeah. Yeah. And that just shows you. There you go.
Yeah.
And by the way,
the government made a big stink, shoved the stock down, made no sense. But that's when we bought low. This is one of those rare examples where we actually bought low. I mean, this stock was slammed by the bull crap, right?
Yeah, it's getting killed.
And it's beautiful.
And by the way, you get another confirmation of government inefficiency or ineffectiveness or whatever you want to call it, just with today, with the closing of the government.
Right.
So, we got a couple
toast.
Things are just hanging out there. J.P. Morgan did, in fact, stop out.
Oh, that's
so
too bad.
Yep. Berkshire Hathaway short is up 2%. TBT is just doing nothing. Apollo Group is up 15%, doing nicely. Short on Philip Morris up 2%. Freeport hanging in there nicely. What else do we got? HomeAway. Man, my whole thesis on that. 2 days after I talked about that, the stock was downgraded by Morgan Stanley, and it came down like 7% or 8%. It's been kind of just a little bit ugly since then. Yeah. Clean energy fuels popped 6.5% today. That was good because we kind of was running down into the very close to the stop point there. CIFCO and Vertex just doing nothing, down 3% on a short and flat on a long. Do you have any of those wonderful, unbelievable insider buying things going on?
There's a couple that showed up that I was thinking about, but I'm not. They're not that outstanding. Copart has this guy Willis Johnson who's been buying. I think he just bought $6 million worth of the stock. It's auto.
It's CPRT, right?
Yeah, CPRT. It's a bunch of auto dealerships, yep. Mm-hmm. And he's the chairman of the board. Now, when the chairman of the board, you'd think maybe there's something going on if he's buying the stock. Now, he was selling this stock before. Mm-hmm. Until just recently, as a matter of fact, he was. If you look at his specific pattern, he was exercising some options and selling, and exercising some options, selling, and then he was selling and selling and selling and selling until June 15th. That was the last time he sold any of the stock. He was selling a lot, and then this chart is weird, which indicates something's up. And
well, here's something. This is interesting because. In Copart, they were up about 3% today or so, right? And what I found interesting is that they were cut. Their price target was cut to 36 by analysts at J.P. Morgan, pretty major firm. But they were upgraded by a much smaller firm, and that's what really drove it today, which is really kind of weird. They were also downgraded to underperform at Zacks a couple of days – or yesterday, actually, the day before. And the stock still managed to be up. Now, you know, I don't think the after hours really was
well,
right.
Well, the stock did have that big collapse, and mm-hmm. then it's been making a comeback. Now, here's some of the sales prices. He was selling at 42. He exercised some options, and then he was selling at 40. Then he was selling. He was selling at 27, selling at 24, and then he sold at 24, 24, 24, 24, 23. Now he's buying at 31.
Mm.
So I'm guessing that something's up. And I think we should put that on there and see what happens.
As long, okay. The big, tremendous, as a matter of fact, move on the volume today. You had about 2.5 million shares traded, and that was about two times the average volume. So pretty impressive. A lot of news on them today, man. There's a lot of news on them today. I got a lot of stuff.
You know,
going
it's
on
not
here.
The kind of stock that I would ever be interested in. If some guy owns a bunch of dealerships.
Well, they also do. I think they also do parts.
Yeah, maybe the parts business is what the deal is. I'm not sure, but there's something. It seems to me something's up because this guy's not going to drop $12 million. Or no, I'm sorry, not 12, but $6 million on 12 million shares after selling like a maniac for most of the year, unless he knows something. That's the thesis here of these guys who insider buying. Now, yeah. I do want to remind people that insider buying is not the same as insider selling.
Right. But the other thing is that there was all the car numbers that came out today. And even though there's a little bit of a dip in growth, I mean, I think we're at some kind of like a 15 million SAR for the year, which was up nicely, about a million cars compared to last year.
That could be it. I know that this is not happening in Europe.
They have a bunch of Europe, too, there. They have a bunch of stuff there. They also do this virtual bidding, and they have all sorts of things
going on in Europe. But the car sales are falling through the floor. They're not doing very well at all.
Mm-hmm. All right. We got Copart on there.
Okay.
CPRT, and I'm going to say insiders.
Suspicious insider activity.
Activity. Oh, yeah, good. Yeah, activity. Enter. Okay, anything else?
No.
Well, I'm going to keep it clean for this week, too, also. I mean, we've had a couple that have been interesting, but there's plenty on here right now, and I think we're in a very interesting part of the market cycle that could really go either way, and it's very news-dependent. And
I agree with that. I have no shorts that I see on the entire list. And I like shorts, but I'm not seeing any. I just don't know. I just don't see a good one. I think the way I've been watching it as we do this, when the thing turns to a short market, it just really goes crazy. It's just everything shorts.
Yeah, everything. And then they just ramp it back 2 days later. I mean, there are some of the. There's a high probability that the high beta stocks are going to come in a bit. I mean, they've been on a tear. You know, you look at many of the names that are the momentums. I mean, you know, Green Mountain was going crazy and then it just plopped. Buffalo Wild Wings has just hit, I think, an all-time high today. You know, you're seeing a lot of those kind of names really gather some steam here. And the question is going to be whether or not, you know, it can maintain that kind of momentum moving forward. And, you know, especially going into earnings season, which starts, I believe, on the 8th next week with Alcoa and J.P. Morgan's coming out next week.
Here we go again.
Yeah, here we go. You know, you get the run-up of Alcoa into earnings and the drop.
Yeah, that's
right. We've talked about that before.
Yeah,
I'm sure
it happens
that's what's
like every four times a year.
So, everybody, do me a favor. Go over to DH Unplugged and put in your best guess for McDonald's. And make sure to tell your friends about a little tell your friends button on there. Make sure to tell some friends not only to do that, but to listen to this very fine and refined and very well thought out podcast that's done on a weekly basis.
Exactly.
You know?
And we'll
don't
be
get
back
anything
again,
better than this.
Back again next Tuesday.
I look forward to it. I'll see you then.
Adios.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.